We've got a couple incredible sponsors that always help us put this show on. First up, Multicraft Daddy. Multicraft underscore daddy. Open up your Instagram app. Send him a DM. He sends out gifts every single week. And if you give him your email address, you also can get 10% off your first order. Multicraft screen printing and digital supplies have been around for over 50 years, providing the industry with top brands at competitive prices. So as usual, send your info over to his Instagram account and you'll be entered to win. Usually sends out a bunch of PMI tape every single week. So that is awesome. Next up, Stalls.com. If you're ready to take your custom apparel to the next level, Stalls is the leader in heat printing solutions. We were just at their new facility launch in Michigan. Unbelievable to see that in person. It's such a cool company. Whether you're a small business just starting out or an established brand scaling, Stalls makes the hustle easy. They're here to simply heat press to help you heat press and profit. So they got equipment, transfers, and support to help you out. Use the code HUSTLER20. That's 20% off your next DTF transfer order. It's HUSTLER20. GraphX Source. GraphX offers industry-leading outsourcing options for your shop by truly becoming a part of your team. They plug and play with Printavo, and they just manage the SEPs, mockups, creative art, digitizing, some back office admin and customer service. They've been doing it for 40 years. So they've been in the game for quite some time and they work with tons and tons of shops. If you mention the code PRINTAVOPOD24, that's 50% off your first order to give them a try. So that's PRINTAVOPOD24. EasyWay.com. This is the URL to use, EasyWay.com/giveaway. If you enter, this is actually a big giveaway, $250 every single month of product giveaway. So they've got this monthly giveaway program to give back to their amazing customers, $250 of product credit, easyway.com/giveaway. EasyWay makes reclaiming screens a whole lot easier with their EasyWay systems, chemicals, and equipment. I think we're good to go. Kyle. Beautiful sweater you're wearing.
You like that?
I like the, he's, for the audio listeners, wearing a fabric sweater, AS color.
He understood the assignment.
Yeah. Thanks, sir. How's your group been going?
Good. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's been good. It's been good. I think we actually meet, we're coming up, I think, this week. So it's been a little bit, you know, next week. We meet next week.
I was going to make some that was totally irrelevant, but I'm going to say it anyways. Do you know when you print for your friends as gifts that are other printers? Like Kyle, if you printed a batch of stuff and sent it to us, you're like, I hope this prints well.
Yeah. Like who printed it? I was going to ask that.
And so when I was printing these for fabric, we sent out care packages and I was like, all right, guys, print these, make sure they're fucking straight. Right. And I'm like, please make sure it just comes in right. Like, please make sure it prints right. Because I just don't want to be the laughing stock of everyone.
Yeah, that's rough, man.
Does that ever go through your head or are these just inside my brain thoughts?
No, I mean, I think about that all the time. Like, like anything that gets printed for like the Print Hustlers Conference, I mean, you know, it's getting scrutinized hard. So, it's kind of similar. Like, at Printing United, like, you go to all these booths, man, and it's just like, I can't think of anything I'd rather like to do less than like be on center stage at like a trade show, a bunch of like my peers, like trying to print in front of them.
Takes me back to, there was maybe a Long Beach or Fort Worth or something. And we happened to walk by the Workhorse booth and Justin Lawrence was printing on a manual. He had this like camo hoodie they were printing. And the longest line I've ever seen to get, cause it was a really nice hoodie, but we thought it was for Justin and his masterful skills. I mean, and the free hoodie, but he was just working that press for
Kyle. How was Printing United? Were you there?
Yeah, I was there for a day. And so I think, you know, you could go all 3 days and not see everything. So, it seemed pretty quick and, but yeah, I mean, it was good. It's just, I don't know. I guess I'm a little ADHD. It's like, I always have a plan, like walking into it and then like you walk in and it's just like sensory overload and it's just like the sounds and the smells and it, like everything's like grabbing for your attention. So I get sidetracked very easily, But I got to see some good things. I mean, one of the vendors that I was there to go see, like, they were launching a new printer for the show. And then I went to their booth, and apparently they said that, like, a forklift went through the printer, so they didn't even have it set up. So that was a little disappointing.
So what was your mission going to Printing United? What were you walking in there to do?
I think for me, like, so we've been researching, like, getting into, like, a expanded color gamut DTF printer. So I just wanted to kind of kick the tires on a few of the different ones that I'd been researching online. And, you know, I think the main thing for us is that, like, what issues that we ran into with the Mamaki, and then just sort of like the after service, or their after sales service and support, like anything that we get into now, I just really want to make sure that, you know, we feel really comfortable with who we're working with. So, you know, I think a good way to go and find that out is, you know, if you go to the trade show and you kind of have conversation, you know, talk to the people fit, you know, face to face, and kind of get a feel for, you know, what that might be like. So
any great findings? Forklift through a DTF machine?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's tricky. I think it's like, it's crazy because it's still early. Right. And so, like, I feel like, I think I'm most impressed right now by the guys at American Print Supply. I know that people kind of either love or hate them, but, and it was funny because, like, so I brought my whole family. So my wife and my kids were there, and, you know, they're wearing, like, they're, like, full on, like, sublimated, like, shirts and stuff. And they kind of look like, in a way, that's kind of what you want, right? Like, you want guys who are kind of like, they're geeks. They know the machines, like, inside and out, you know? But anyway, so yeah, I don't know. We talked with them, and then, you know, M&R has got a machine out. The Cinco.
The Sace is coming out.
Right. No, it's the Quattro. But anyway, it was like my sales rep didn't even know, like, what, he didn't even know what rip it was on, you know? So it's like, I don't know. I shouldn't know more about the machine than you, right? If you're going to be selling it to me. So I don't know. That's sometimes a kind of a red flag, but
a lot of red flags.
But it was good. I got to see Andy McDougal. Do you guys know Andy?
Andy he's the one that's always poster printing, right?
Yeah. So he was there. He came down from Canada. He always is with, like, RH Solutions. They're like a big graphic screen printing equipment company. So he's the guy that, when I first started, like, came out and, like, helped me get my like garage shop set up and stuff. So we kind of have, like, a little bit of a connection, I guess, there. And I bought that, you know, I'm building out, like, a print studio. So I bought some used equipment off of him anyway. So we got to see him. And the last time he saw my wife and kids, they were like, well, Harper, my younger son, who had just been born. I mean, he was probably like, he was just, you know, infant. And then Finn was like 2. And so now we were there, and Finn's 18 and Harper's 15. So
how can you have an 18-year-old if you're like 30 years old? Wow. You look great. 30.
I'm not 30.
You look great. You look great. Everyone should go on YouTube right now and see how great Kyle's. You're looking great for 30. Bruce, what do you got?
Well, what's this poster shop you're making? You've talked about this before a little bit, but more of a retail thing.
Well, no, it's really like, so I'm not 30, right? It's my midlife crisis is what it is. Is that it's like, I think it's kind of like, you know, some guys are into, like, cars, and so, like, they'll go buy a car that they want to fix up. So, like, I went and bought a bunch of old screen printing equipment and kind of, like, doing a makeshift fine art studio in order to do, you know, like, fine art prints. Yeah. But it's slow going, because basically what it is, it's like we'll have a slow month at the shop and I have time to work on it, and then we get slammed busy and then I'm kind of pulled back into things, and so then it kind of gets put on hold. So it's sort of like my hobby right now, I guess.
Kyle, what are your day-to-day responsibilities?
Well, so we hired a production manager who has been taking over a lot of my day-to-day. But because of the seasonality of the business, like August and September, I definitely get pulled back in. And I kind of like, I almost, so like this year, this was our production manager's, like, first busy season. And so for the last 2 months, I definitely got pulled back in and kind of ran the show again. But now that we've slowed down, he's back in that role.
Okay. What is run the show? Get more specific. Like, what, if I put a body cam on you for the day, what would you be doing?
Well, right now, honestly, like I do still have a pretty heavy hand, like, in the DTF side of things. But really, kind of like what I'm doing is, like, so what used to be our showroom is now, like, our DTF area, and that's where my computer is. And I typically just kind of have like a standing desk. And so like when I come in, I'm typically doing like a sort of still helping with like the morning check-in, just sort of make sure that everybody's, you know, set up and, kind of like going in the right direction. But a little bit of that's kind of like old habit, right? Cause so like this last week that I was out of town, I mean, he did that. Right. And I wasn't needed in the shop, just, you know, ran, and I wasn't there for 4 days. So, but yeah, so, I mean, I think, you know, I still, and then my wife, she actually just started working for the business too. And so it's been kind of interesting because she, again, like it's like all hands on deck during August and September for us. So she's like been in the back, like counting stuff in and staging shirts. And
dang. Bruce is heat pressing regularly.
My kids are there
the first few fabric sweaters.
Yeah, but I mean, both my kids are there right now running Reclaim. So that's actually, I wanted to take, like my older son, Finn, he's getting ready to graduate. And I wanted to, you know, kind of show him the industry, like the other sides of it. Like he's just really personable. He'll be like really good at like sales or marketing. I don't know that he necessarily wants to likes the idea of like taking over the shop, you know, which is completely fine with me, but I just wanted to kind of give him the opportunity to see that, you know, it's a huge industry and there's, you know, there's other things that you can do.
Builds character, spraying out screens.
Reclaiming builds character.
Oh, they're using a Lotus, so it's not like they're.
Oh.
So it's not building that much character.
What did you have to take over from the product manager when you guys were super busy again?
I mean, honestly, I kind of took over the role of production manager because we needed him like literally like in production. So, he's a very versatile, like he was a musician and like he's from the area. He moved away. And then he got a job at a screen shop down, I think in like Atlanta, Georgia, and kind of worked as like a, almost like kind of a, got almost like mentored under a guy that had, you know, just been in screen printing forever and learned a lot of stuff. And so anyway, he's, you know, he knows like he's, it's really good. Cause if we need him to fill in, like we run a pretty small skeleton crew. Right. And so, like if we need him to fill in to make screens, he knows how to make screens. If we need him to, you know, run the press, he can run the press. If we need him to pull, he can pull or catch or, but then we do a lot of fulfillment. So he's also like, you know, very tech savvy. So like when we're doing our big fulfillment, like he can take over, you know, generating all the labels and things, which I mean, we're, you know, when we're spending $10,000 in postage or whatever, you know, you want somebody that
can use ShipStation, right? Yeah. Kyle, you were texting with us and you said we had our first week where the number of DTF impressions beat out screen printing. This is some new territory. So just so everyone knows, this is Kyle from Print My Threads. All-star fabric member. Thank you for the plug. Can you tell us about your shop and layout? So then let's preface this, like how many autos, how many DTF machines, just so people can think through this within their head.
So our facility is like 9,000 square feet. It used to be a roller rink. So it's like, it was wide open space. We have, I think I mentioned, so like when you first come in the building, it used to be a showroom, but now that's our DTF space. So we have two Mamaki DTFs that we're running. We have the auto reclaim right behind that and then the dark room right behind that. So you kind of have like, you know, it's partitioned off. We have an office for our two on-site designers and the break room, and then everything else is wide open production space. We have three side-by-side MEMS. We have a hat press and a tag press for in terms of the heat press department. We have two 10 color autos. So if you include myself and my wife and my two kids, we're like at 11. But I mean, so my two kids are, you know, I mean, they just work a little bit after school, like when they're not in sports. So yeah, I mean, we're pretty lean, like crew, like, so more, really more like, I guess 9, if you count me and my wife, and 7, if you don't. So
was that purposeful? Like, were you bigger before and scaled back or?
Yeah, at one point, I mean, at one point, I think we got up to around 13 or 14 employees and, you know, pre-COVID. And I think I've shared this story before. It just, you know, we got to the point where it was just sort of unsustainable growth. We just kept, you know, we just kept growing and adding people and adding equipment and kind of throwing people and equipment at the problem. And, you know, so like our revenue was like this and our overhead was like this. And so, you know, we had to kind of take a step back and really like get a handle on our financials and really learn, you know, how to run a business, which we've done. I mean, like, so we're, you know, we're super lean and super profitable. Like, so we just had our third quarter profit share, and it was, you know, we netted $152,000 in Q3. So like we paid out, it was substantial. I think we paid out $35,000 or something through the profit share. Anyway,
if you guys hear Kyle's earlier episode that he did with us, we'll have to link to it. But Kyle could be one of the only shops that we've talked to that successfully runs a profit share program at the end of every quarter. That's like super transparent, super impressive. So like you guys had some sort of awakening where you got the business, got it lean, got it profitable, and now you're just kind of like filling in, making it hum a little bit. How are you thinking about the fact that your DTF machine is outperforming screen printing now? Does that keep you up at night? What's this like next stage?
No, I mean, it doesn't keep me up at night. And I don't, you know, I don't know that it's fair to say that it's outperforming it, but I guess it's just like, I don't know. It's, you know, I think like for us, it's been kind of interesting because like, so when I started the business, you know, we were 100% water-based. And like that was really important to me. And like, you know, I'm like, I learned how to screen print is like in art school. And, you know, like I'm coming at it from that standpoint. And so, you know, that was like a really hard decision for us to like kind of say, hey, we're getting away from water base and we're going to do Plastisol. But we're pretty like 100% Plastisol now. And so I kind of like look at DTF the same way, right? It's like initially, like I didn't want to get into it and I was very opposed to it. And I, you know, thought it was pretty trashy, honestly. And sort of the dumbing down of the industry. But it's in the 3 years that we've been doing it, you know, it's come a long way, right? Like some of the samples and some of the stuff that we saw, I mean, it was pretty trashy. And I feel like now, I mean, some of the stuff that I saw at the show, I actually took some pictures to show my staff. It's like with some of the halftoning and artwork that they're doing now, like I feel like a lot of people would be hard pressed. There were some shirts that if you had like a shirt here, like side by side, with some of the half toning and stuff, it's hard to tell if it's screen printed or DTF. So it's getting there. And, so it's, I mean, it's interesting to me. And like,
I thought also like, especially going to the Stahls facility, the effects too, it wasn't like we're trying to replicate. It was like, we're actually going in our right direction. And this is some really cool. I mean, just Heat Apply just in general was in some of the things you showed me at your guys' office, Steven, I was like, oh my gosh, this is sick.
Well, yeah. And like, Adrian did an article on us and we did like I sent a picture and like for one of our clients, we did like a print where it was like a half tone kind of gradient fade for this water. And then like the top was this like polar bear with like a car anyway. And it was DTF on top and then screen print on the bottom. And it gave like this really kind of cool elevated effect because it had like a no feel, you know, print here. And then it had that kind of textured feel here. And I don't know, it was, so I think there's a lot you can do with it. And I don't know. I mean, it's just, it's happening. So, I mean, we certainly are embracing it. And like, I feel like, you know, it was a total shit show when we first got into it and we've worked through it the last 3 years. So to some extent, I'm trying to kind of stay out in front of it as much as possible.
What's like the magic setup now? Yeah. Like what works? You talked about the equipment you have, but like what, you know, some folks feel like they get stuck being a maintenance operator of the machine or having to train people to run the machine or balancing ordering transfers or bringing the house. Like, is there a setup that you feel like works super well for you now in terms of people and process? Maybe would have been the best one to get to sooner.
I mean, honestly, one of the reasons we're looking to get into like a different machine and a 9-color machine that's just properly color profiled is that I feel like we're chasing our tails with color all the time. To the point where, you know, a lot of times, like what we're seeing on screen isn't what we're getting like right out, you know, like when you go to hit print. And so I think that if we can really get a machine that's just profiled properly and that has that expanded color gamut, I think it's going to save us a ton of time. Cause right now there's just a ton of back and forth because we're so picky about color. And a lot of our clients are that we spend a lot of time, like where we have the two machines. A lot of days it's like the whole morning will be spent just doing test prints on the one machine so that we can make sure that the file's good before then we like run production on the other machine. And so if we can, you know, I don't think you're going to always 100% eliminate that, but if we could eliminate a lot of that and which I, you know, that's the thing is like when all of this came out, people didn't know how to color profile. And I think you could argue that a lot of the companies still don't know how to color profile because you're seeing a lot of the expanded color, they're using RGOB. Where like they should really probably be using violet instead of blue. But anyway, so you can get into the weeds and all that. But I mean, like, I think that like as you know, that side of the industry is learning more about color, and the inks are getting better, and the powders are getting better, and the films are getting better. It's just all getting better and faster. You know, and then you've got a lot of the heat press automation, which, I mean, that's a whole nother conversation. I'm still not really sold on like a lot of the like fully automated solutions that are out there.
What do you like there, and what don't you like on the heat press automation? You mean the circular presses or the...
I like the idea that you can, you know, get more impressions out per hour, but like I see these machines, like I just, to me, they're just a little bit too robotic. Like I just feel like, you know, the little suction cup hands are sometimes picking up like more than one transfer, and they're not always being placed accurately. And so like, you know, it's just kind of like the same thing. It's like you can run your automatic press at 600 pieces an hour, but if you're not loading the shirts straight, what, like who cares? Right. So like, I, you know, to me, I think it's like, I still think, I think Steven, you mentioned like the MEMS that are just like have the two heat presses, but are still like managed by people. Yeah. I think that's probably the fastest route. And I think if it's done correctly, and then honestly, I think that, like, I think when we at the last Print Hustlers, when we, toured, where do we tour the, in the Cleveland, like near, yeah, Stakes. I don't know if you noticed, but it was like, they had like an army of side-by-side MEMS, and then they had a rotary heat press, like off to the side that nobody was using. And like, to me, that was very telling, cause they're like a huge facility and they're doing like massive production. And I think there's something to be said about like the MEMS are just so simple and easy to use. And, some of these rotary machines are like, they're just, they're intimidating, right? It's similar to like, you've got to find someone who's like, you know, the right kind of, you have to find like an operator similar to like what you, you know, finding someone who can run an automatic press.
Yeah. So I think the most, so Kyle, do you heat press, do you do two hits on every transfer? So I think what we're referring to is you, you know, heat press it with the film on, peel, and then do a second hit to like close it off. The, what I think shops could actually do to speed up the process is to run heat presses that do one hit versus heat presses that do the second hit. The second hit is unskilled. You can go a lot faster and a lot hotter. And so we actually, like on our production lines, every shirt only gets touched once per heat press, right? And so they're not actually going back and forth. So they like heat press it, take it off, peel it, it goes in another pile, and then another person is doing all of the second hits at once.
When they do the second hits, are they threading it or are they just laying it on top?
Just laying it on top, and it's half the time and like 15 degrees hotter. It's like quick, hot, and fast, just, you know? And so like you can make incremental improvements in your production line to get out, you know, instead of 60 shirts an hour, 100 shirts an hour, just by rejigging the process a little bit. We've got rotating heat presses that are used for specific purposes that we like a little bit more, but for our D2C business, they're all of the shuttle presses. So we have a little Spanish Armada.
I just like the idea too. It's like the, you have to think about it differently, but I mean, like, you know, when you're running an automatic, I mean, the way we run, at least, you know, you've got your loader, your unloader, and then the person catching it at the end of the dryer. So whenever you're running a job, you're, you know, that's three people. So, you know, if you're averaging 300 pieces an hour, which for us is, you know, I'd say pretty average, right? So if you can take those three people and they can average 100 an hour on a heat press, it's similar output.
Yeah. Okay. So if a shop was getting in, so you started with the Mamakis and now you're thinking about switching to expand color gamut, things like that. Would you, if you were to go back in time, are you happy with the decision you made? How many years in are you?
Three. I mean, I think we were like the third or fourth shop to get like for the DTF Superstore did an install with. Like we were early. And like the guy who did our install, it was definitely his first install.
I remember my first install.
Because I was like very like clear with my sales rep. I was like, I do not want, because we, you know, I still had like PTSD from our DTG days. And I was like, I do not want this to be like that. And he was like, oh no, it won't be. And, you know, and then this guy showed, like, you know, the installer shows up and I mean, they couldn't profile the machine. It was like printing white first and then color, and like ink was dripping down everywhere. We went through so much ink and so much film, and I was sitting there like, and of course, you know, I had a job, I think, like right out of the gate. Like, one of the reasons we decided to pull the trigger on is we had a customer who had been wanting us to do some of these designs for years that were like 18 color, you know, and it just wasn't realistic. So like, we had like a 600 piece job due, you know what I mean? Like, that we had to get running like as soon as the printer was like, you know, ready to go. So like, we certainly didn't ease our way into it. Like, we, you know, as soon as that printer was set up, like, we started running like a 600 piece job on it. So
you would go back in time and buy the same machines?
I think so, just because like, it was the first Japanese machine that was like more plug and play. So, you know, we didn't have this experience that a lot of people did, like the early on, like Chinese machines. So I think, you know, it's been a good experience overall. I mean, obviously there were some things that happened that were out of our control, and there's been some issues with, you know, firmware and dampers and things, but I think, you know, overall, like, it's been a great addition, and it's like allowed us to kind of like, it's really interesting because it gives us a lot of flexibility over production, because there's a lot of jobs that we get that could go DTF or screen print. And so again, like, since we're such like a small crew and we try to run so lean, that a lot of times it's like, depending on who the customer is, we might, you know, decide at the very end or make like a switch right at the very end. Like, you know, like, oh, it was going to be screen print, but we'll just go ahead and run a DTF because we've got a backlog in this, you know, in here, or vice versa. Right. If we get a backlog in heat press, then we might just go ahead and put it on the auto.
So Kyle, and then I'll let Bruce say something. If a shop was getting into DTF, what is the expected lifespan of a machine? What can you expect? What would be good? Like, if you got this many years out of it and then it's trash.
I mean, you know, so we've been running ours for, so we got the TX150, which is was like the single head. And we upgraded about 6 to 8 months into the two head machine and got a second two head machine at the same time. So we've been running those two printers now for like about close to 2 years. And we're on the same print head. Like, we haven't had to replace a print head. So like, and we run them. I mean, we run 3,000 piece jobs on them. So like, we haven't had the same kind of nightmares that you hear from like a lot of shops that are running the Chinese machines, which makes me like
unknown then, or it's still TBD. Have you seen something different, Steven, as far as?
Well, I just bought 6 print heads last week and 2 main boards and tubes. I mean, so with the Chinese machines, the color gamut is, you can get a lot more vibrancy, and essentially the machines are whatever casing on the outside, you're going to replace all the insides a few times. So we've probably rebuilt all our machines several times over. We know how to replace every living, breathing part of it. It's definitely not as plug and play, but we're able to nail a different, like probably a little bit more vibrant of a color gamut than Mamaki. But the Mamaki is definitely easier to use. I still think it goes back to the conversation we had of, if you're not spending $70,000 to $100,000 a year on transfers, just keep buying transfers.
No, I mean, I think that, you know, I think for a lot of shops that makes sense. So one of the things I did see, so, you know, I was impressed by the Roland that I saw at the show. That was some of the ones that had like the really, like the artwork was done really well, and you almost couldn't tell if it was like sim process screen printing or not. And then, Brother came out with the machine. So Brother like has a true roll to roll machine now, and it was pretty impressive too. Again, neither of them are expanded color gamut. But again, it's like, if you profile that, I think that part of our issue is like, I mean, there's times where I'm like, I don't even know if we really need expanded color. I think that it's just the Mamakis just have like just such horrible color profiling that's kind of part of the issue. Cause I've seen some pretty impressive prints from, you know, just CMYK printers, right? Cause it has to do with the machine. It has to do with the ink. It has to do with the film. It has to do with the rip. It has to do with the color profile, right? So it's not just,
I mean, things that go into it.
Yeah.
You're a pretty numbers heavy driven guy. Have you seen a change in profitability? Granted, there's so many factors that go into this with the business and, you know, just general orders coming in, but.
And so, like, for us, like, I need to do a better job. Like, so I need to do a better job at coding stuff differently, like, for accounting purposes. I've been kind of lazy about that, like, on the DTF side. Like, we do a little bit of contract printing through this that Stream platform. And then, but I mean, one of the things that DTF Superstore did is, like, they did a video, like, specifically for the Mamaki to kind of, like, figure out, like, what your cost per square inch is. And so, that, you know, what they kind of deemed was that, you know, your cost per square inch on the Mamaki, you know, for your consumables, so your ink, your film, your powder, your electricity, and your labor, you're right around a penny a square inch, right? And so we've just kind of used that as like a ballpark or a baseline for when we're pricing our jobs. And like I wouldn't say that we've seen like a huge increase in profitability, but we're also like not losing margin where we're, you know, doing much more DTF. So. The way we handle our pricing, we kind of make sure that we maintain the margin we want. And so we've just made sure that, like, you know, the margin we get on a screen print job is comparable to the margin we're going to get on a DTF job.
What about this year? Just high level, how have you guys been doing? How's demand that you're seeing? How's your customers doing?
I mean, we until this month, until October, we were up, I want to say like 3 to 5% maybe. So not like we weren't up a lot. We were, you know, pretty like flat. And then this month, like last year, this month, we had like a really big program for one of our hospitals that we knew we weren't going to get. So you know, we had just like an amazing October last year that isn't going to happen this year. So that's hurting us a little bit, but we're planning for it. So, you know, we budgeted for it and then we're just going to we're using this time to sort of start working on end of year stuff and get out in front of next year. We also, you know, our November and December is always very slow. So we actually shut the shop down for like typically about 2 weeks between Christmas and like right around Christmas and New Year's. And we give our people like paid time off and stuff. So we budget for that. Going back to the profit share, I mean, that's one of the things that was kind of interesting is that like, so we pay out quarterly on the profit share and, I don't know. It's one of my wife and I were talking about the other day is like, would it be more beneficial or better to like just pay out like a year end profit share? Because what you're seeing is it's like, so like right now, October for us, we're going to show a loss. But a big chunk of that is because we just paid out a huge profit. Yeah. We just paid out the Q3 profit share. So like the Q3 profit share was similar to running like an additional payroll in the month. So, you know, from that standpoint, it's, you know, it kind of skews your numbers and it messes with your cash flow a little bit. And then the other thing that we do is that, you know, so we know that we're typically not going to be profitable in Q4, but we'll go ahead and pay out like a year end bonus anyway. And so, I don't know. It's like, so we're kind of in talks about like, would it make more sense to just, you know, pay out the profit share at the end of the year? People get a larger sum of money then, kind of in lieu of the business, you know, paying out a bonus even when we're not like.
It's generous of you to pay out an additional profit share / bonus in Q4 when you're not profitable in Q4. I mean, especially when you talk about like, you know, because the cash flow, and you could argue like, okay, well, Q3, we did well, so it'll carry over. So yeah, it's going to be a negative month, but like on a year annual basis, you know, all right, it'll smooth out. But
Kyle, are you more motivated by profit or top line? Or like, it seems like you run a calm business.
It's kind of funny. Like, I don't really know what my motivation is sometimes. Like, I don't know that it's money, you know, like, I don't know.
You don't want to not be making money. That would.
No, right. I mean, I definitely want to be making money and we definitely like, it does bother me. Like if we have a month where we show any kind of a loss, but yeah, it's, I don't know. It's interesting. And it's like, you know, as you guys know, like running a business can be like, I mean, I want to be kind of careful what I say in case any of my employees watch this, but it can be like so thankless, right? So like, we just had this awesome quarter. And we do this profit share but it's become this thing. It's kind of like, I think I mentioned before, it's like, you know, yeah, it becomes an expectation, and it's just like not a single person said thank you. There wasn't like a quick text that was like, awesome, man, thank you, you know? And so like, well, and like you try not to take it personally. And I guess, you know, the idea of the profit share is that you want them to sort of like have ownership and, you know, like feel like they earned that, right? And so I guess in like, they shouldn't technically have to thank you. But at the same time, like, you know, like what most business owners do is they have like a really good profitable month and they take all that money.
Most business owners don't have profitable months. Some business owners have profitable months. But like what I'm hearing though is like you're not stressed about it. The problems that you're dealing with now are more like design flaws, like, ah, we need to fix that a little bit. You're like making smaller tweaks on your business, but it seems like you've gotten this plane that you're flying up to 30,000 feet and it's now just like handling the turbulence and all that stuff. How have you designed the business to complement you, your wife, your family? Because it feels like you've kind of achieved a threshold of like contentness, happiness. You said it earlier, like it's not all about money. How do
you start listening to now, Steven? It's about the thankies.
It's super freaking annoying when they're.
Well, I think what a lot of it, I mean, I think we're fortunate in a lot of ways in the sense that like kind of where we live, right? Like I never really wanted, I'm from Albuquerque. My wife's from here. Like it's very kind of small town rural. We're very much sort of like big fish, small pond kind of scenario. And it's not really anywhere that I ever wanted to live or thought that we'd end up, but it's worked out very well in the sense that, you know, like we were able to like acquire our building and like we've just, you know, we've been fortunate in the sense that like I think, you know, I was actually listening to I was traveling last week, I was getting caught up on all your podcasts, you know, and it's like, and then I hear some of the conversations in Fabric and like initially like I wanted to be one of those shops, right? Like I wanted to be one of those bigger, you know, 6-10+ million dollar shops, and I had these like kind of visions of grandeur, and like I think at some point I just realized that that wasn't realistic based on like the geographic area that we were in. And so I kind of just had to like, you know, be okay with adopting sort of like this mentality of like, it's okay to be small and then, you know, kind of figure out like, you know, what the right size of the business is. And it was hard. I mean, that's a struggle, right? But I think, and I owe a lot of that to my wife too, because like I'm always the one that wants to go out and buy the next thing or do, you know, like very ambitious. And she's always the one that kind of keeps me grounded and kind of plays the devil advocate and kind of pulls back a little bit. And so I think, you know, one of the things that happens, and you guys have talked about this in our industry, right, is it's like it's so easy to go to like a Printing United and, you know, see all of the shiny toys and buy shit. And it's just like, that's a lot of t-shirts. Right. So like every time you go buy something, it's like you got to print a lot of t-shirts.
I feel like 10 years ago, you know, 7 years ago, 6 years ago, whatever, at the trade shows, it was like the gun show. Like, what do you got? What do you got? What are you getting? What do you have? How many autos do you have? And then now the older shop owners are just like, I don't care. Like
it's kind of like I was just having this conversation with Finn and Harper last night, right? Because Finn's getting ready to graduate. And there's like a really like kind of cool small school like just north of us called Shawnee State. And it's like very affordable. And like we're really kind of like encouraging him to kind of go there, and super small like student to faculty ratio and whatever. And but he's like diehard UK fan, right? Like he's way into sports and he's always been a UK. So like he really wants to go to the University of Kentucky, which it costs about double. And, you know, so we've been having these conversations with them where it's like, you know, we don't want to tell you you can't go, and like you can go, but like you just have to understand sort of like what you're signing on for and like what the commitment is, because it's kind of the same thing, right? It's like you go to college and you're immediately taking on this enormous amount of debt. And then so it's like you're starting out your adult life with a tremendous amount of debt. And I think that like as business owners, we kind of do the same thing. It's so easy to like, you know, when you first are starting, you know, you take on this tremendous amount of debt and then you just have to spend all your time working to like pay that off. Right. Whereas if like play it smart and like not start out with that debt, then you don't necessarily have to work as much.
It's like your partner, Steven.
Jed.
Yeah.
I mean, super blue collar, right? Like no debt, always paid for things in cash, went to trade school, became a welder, rose to the ranks, and I'd call him like blue collar rich. Like he's got everything he wants and all the toys in the shed and in the country and the lake houses and, you know, but he lives a simple, simple life doing that. And I think a lot of people envy it, but
it's interesting because with the, I'm a little bit stuck on the expectation of like, because I also felt that way too. Of, all right, we did profit sharing for a long time as well. And yeah, it just gets sent out. And then after a year or two, it, like you said, sort of becomes expectation and is what it is. So then the company switched to more bonus-based program. So it was like X percent of salary. And then that was also based on performance. So, you know, I don't know, 1 to 5, like if you're a 4 out of 5, that percentage of your bonus percentage is what's paid out to you. Sort of also becomes expected, but at least that reduced my expectations too. Of like, I wasn't expecting a, oh, thanks, like sick, I'm glad we crushed it type of thing. And maybe it's because like over a quarter, let alone a year, it's such a long time to, I think about it in that perspective of, yeah, we're going to keep working towards this, keep working towards this. But then maybe when you're in the day-to-day of it, you may, like a team member may lose sight of the work that goes into the team group to hit the profitability to then get the bonus. It just doesn't.
I mean, it's the marshmallow experiment, right? Like this is delayed gratification. How much do people care about it? We don't do that at Campus Inc. We do have bonuses and are pretty, give pretty meaty like holiday bonuses if we hit goals. The one thing I like to do is to surprise and delight employees with things that they wouldn't buy for themselves. So for instance, like our CFO loves to cook and he's the stingiest, most frugal human being. So like he got his Christmas bonus, which he wrote his own check and told me whatever it was going to be. But I was like, I just bought him a Blackstone grill. I was like, hey dude, I think you need this, like $350 or whatever. And then like next year I got him like a Traeger. And so it's like, he wouldn't have bought this for himself. And like that to him, that means something. And so you could give someone $300 or $400 of cash, or you could give them an experience or something. What I've felt is like there's a comfortable balance in doing the same, in doing both. I don't know. That's just what I do.
Maybe carry some meaning to it in addition to the cash.
Well, yeah. I mean, honestly, like I think, you know, they were a little, they were like a couple of years ago when whenever Printing United was in Atlanta, I took like the entire team down. And we did that. And ever since they've wanted, like, you know, so like they're always not hinting. They're like straight up saying like, oh, we want to come, you know. And I think the year that we did it, I just said like, well, yeah, we can do that. But just keep in mind, like that's going to, you know, so that'll affect the profit share. But I mean, you know, that's the thing is it's like instead of handing everybody a check, I mean, we could have paid for everybody's trip. Yeah, everybody could have gone to Disney. I don't know that their spouses would have been thrilled with them using the money that way, but they would have had a great time. So
I think the team's like that.
It's cool that you're open and share that, you know, and it like creates it fosters a mindset or like a mature culture of, okay, just because this is a business means we all have to kind of work together. And Kyle, I don't think I've met a shop that does it as well as you do and consistently as you do. And you taught us in Fabric, you've talked about on the podcast. So thank you for sharing that with us. Super, super insightful.
How are you thinking about next year planning? You talked a little bit about wrapping up this year soon and stuff. Like, what are you thinking about in terms of what you want Print My Feds to look like?
You know, I mean, I think like going back to what we were talking about before, I mean, I think that's something that I kind of struggle with a lot just because we are sort of like, we've sort of hit this sweet spot. And so it's always this balance of like, you know, are we trying to grow? And then like, if so, like make sure it's very intentional. And then like, you know, what does that mean in terms of, you know, taking on additional debt or like new hires and whatnot? And so it's kind of this balance between, you know, it's like I was, you know, yesterday we didn't run production yesterday. And so I'd been out of town. And so I went into the shop and I was kind of like, you know, we did not run production yesterday. We didn't have enough to run. So we just called everybody off. So, you know, I was there and then it was like, you know, the studio that I'm building out, like my midlife crisis hobby, it's like I hadn't set foot in that place for a month, you know? So I went over there and I was just like, you know, I just sat there for a little bit and kind of, you know, just to think, because, you know, we don't ever do that anymore. Right. And so, I don't know. It's tricky because it's like, I constantly waver between, like, you know, being gung-ho about buying the next piece of equipment and, or learning embroidery, or do we need to get a, you know, what do we need to do to, you know, increase revenue in our, you know, in our, where we're seasonal, like what can we do to bring in more revenue in those down months, you know? But it was interesting. I was kind of having that conversation with Andy and he was like, he said, yeah, well, he said, I don't know. He said, this is the only industry I know, but he said, I think most industries are seasonal. Right. And he said, so you just kind of have to learn like when, what is that seasonality? And if you know what it is, then you just have to like be comfortable with it and be okay. And then like learn to kind of in like, so when you're slow, like kind of teach yourself to not stress out and like freak out and like then be like chasing your tail the entire time you're slow. Right. Because then it's like, you're going to get busy again. Right. And we know that. I mean, like our seasonality is like, it's very like methodical at this point in the business. And so it's like, it's really hard because you can spend that whole time that you're slow, like freaking out and trying to find projects for people to do, or, you know, or you could just kind of sit back and enjoy it.
I wonder how Spirit of Halloween thinks, or like the Christmas tree companies, right? Like they have to crush it for 30 days. And then they have 11 months to do it all over again, plan it out.
A flower business as well. It's the same thing.
Yeah. I don't know. My business partner told me you always have to crush it in months that don't start with J if we work in the academic calendar. So January, June, July. If you can get through those, crush it 9 months of the year, it'd be fine.
Well, yeah. I mean, like I've had that conversation like with, I mean, that's part of the reason why, like, I mean, think about it. You have to have like a certain amount of equipment and a certain amount of space and whatever, so that you have the capacity to like for us to do like those really big jobs and those really big programs. Right. And so there's times of the year where it seems like we have way too much equipment and like way too much space. And then there's times of the year where we're like, oh my God, we need more equipment. We need more space. So I don't know. I mean, again, this is all I've really known. Well, that's not true. I mean, I worked in the restaurant industry and other things before, but, this is the only like business I've owned, but, I don't know. So I guess that's the thing that I'm still kind of trying to learn is just like, and my wife tries to remind me, it's like, you know, you just, so we know we're going to be slow. So like, let's not freak out. Let's just enjoy it and find some things that we can do, knowing that like, let's take it, you know, let's take that time now. And then, and I think that we do try to kind of build that into our culture. That's the reason why we shut down, you know, between Christmas and New Year's, because we used to, And now we've just told people like, you're going to get the X amount of days paid and it is what it is, because it used to be this thing where, we didn't do that. And then we were going to shut the shop down and everybody was stressed out because they were trying to save up all of their paid time off for the end of the year. So that's part of the reason why we do it, you know?
What about your role next year? Like, have you thought about what you do want to do more of and do less of, especially now that you've got a good production manager?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, the goal really with this new space is for me to just, you know, be able to, you know, operate 100% out of there and not really have to step foot in the shop a whole lot. And I think we're getting there for sure. So, you know, it's just one of those things like my production manager was out sick today. So, I was there, but you know, so it's just, it's happening. But you know, again, it's like, if we go and buy a new DTF machine and that's going to suck me back in, because I'll be the one having to learn the ins and outs of it, right? So I think that's the tricky thing.
Wait, do you? Hold on, time out. Why can't your production manager do it?
Well, and you could. I mean, and that's the thing. I think, I don't know. I see my role as being the person that like figures out the new machinery, the new equipment, and then builds a system out so that I can hand it over to somebody else.
But why can't he do that? Why do you have to?
Probably just not within like his wheelhouse. I don't know. Actually, he used to run Roland, so he might be able to.
I think, I was talking to another leader in our shop and in our business. He's like, I need to dive into this, master it so I can teach someone else. I'm like, why do you have to? why can't you just set the expectations and let them do it? He's like, well, I feel the need to. And it was like, you know.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, it's really interesting. Like, so I was gone all last week, and we got this one, this guy, Zach, who, I mean, Zach's just the best, right? And like, just like kind of quiet, quirky, like, you know, but very thoughtful dude. Just had his second baby. They just bought a house. You know, he's just, anyway, he's like a good dude. Anyway, and so we had this like really hard fulfillment. So normally, like with the fulfillment, it's pretty like streamlined and it just goes through ShipStation. But every once in a while, we'll do fulfillment for the hospital where it's like we have to bag and box everything by cost center. And it's like, it's all very like manual and confusing and convoluted. But man, we came back and it was like, he had everything like so nicely packaged and like these lists. And it was just like, I mean, so much better than anything I ever could have. Like, I guess what I'm trying to say is if I had come in and tried to like build out an SOP and say, follow this, like it wouldn't have ended up as nice as like what he came up with.
Dude, it's so fascinating because I fall into the same traps, but I think that especially the good players, and you tend to know who the good players are. I do think that they rise to the occasion, especially when giving more space to do it. Like, as in, this is just an example, but like as a production manager, hey, you know, whatever, I've nailed our options between three different printers. I want you to like meet the different sales reps, learn, bring all your questions and prepare for that so that you can help pick which one and then be able to take it from there. I had the same things with product, whereas, yeah, I definitely need to still be in it, but definitely not as much as I was.
Right. And like, we actually, so like I had the quarterly like one-on-ones right before I left town, and I was actually, cause I was actually thinking about having, so Nathan, who's one of our, we hired him as a graphic designer, but he's other than me, been the person that's really run and learned the DTF. And so, I actually had like a one-on-one with him and was kind of like talking to him about DTF to just kind of like, cause in the back of my mind, and I had actually talked with Annie, I said, well, what if I'd bring Nathan down and like have him be like my second set of eyes and like help me kind of determine like what machine we want to run. And so rather than just like invite him to do that, I like in the one-on-one, I kind of like just put some feelers out there to see like how interested he was like, or engaged he was in. And like, and it was like, he didn't care. So I was just like, all right, fuck it. We're just going to like do it as a family trip. But like, you know, had he, you know, really like shown some interest in that, like it could have definitely gone differently because so that's the thing. I mean, I don't know. And maybe that wasn't a fair test, but
if you got, okay, if you won the lottery or got hit by a bus, someone would figure it out.
Yeah. Hopefully like my life insurance would just take care of my family. Like,
well, yeah, no, I'm we're not trying to freaking, okay. But I'm saying like, if you were unable to do something and you literally could not do it, someone would step up and do it. I think that's the hardest part for us to do, is to like actually let someone off the deep end and trust that it could get fucked up, but they're going to figure it out. I don't know. I feel like it's more in our heads.
What was those one-on-one? You said you do quarterly one-on-ones. What are some questions that you tend to ask that are good? Cause I always find one-on-ones a little bit tricky to know exactly.
Oh, I suck at one. All of the questions I asked, I got from you guys. I think I did a post about that in Fabric.
I'm always tweaking it though, because it's like, I'm like, did I get enough out of that? Was that, did they feel comfortable? Did they actually share anything? Is there anything actionable? Am I doing it too often? Am I doing that? Like, quarterly is interesting. I think Steven, you said weekly, or what do you do?
For one-on-ones, like direct reports usually like have their one-on-ones once a week. And then everyone should be in a meeting cadence, whether it's once a week or once every 2 weeks. There shouldn't be anyone in the company that isn't met with.
Yeah. So I've got a quick little list, but it was like, what's gone well so far this year? Anything you want to talk about? You know, what questions or feedback do you have? What could we improve upon? How do you feel about the current work, your current workload, and anything we can do to support you in your role? So I think that was sort of a combination of like the stuff I got from you, Kevin, and
yeah, I have these really cool cards that are like, it's called "Where Should We Begin at Work?" They're icebreaker questions for one-on-ones or group settings. And so one of them says like, it's difficult for me to ask for help when, and you actually try to like develop some of their interpersonal work, or like one thing that can instantly ruin your day. What is it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm just really bad at like, I think I'm a talker, you know, and so it's like when I just have to, I'm trying to learn to just shut up. And so like I had Annie, my wife, in the one-on-ones with, you know, with me, just kind of, she's much better at all that than I am. So her and Bridget, her sister who works in the business, ideally they would be running the one-on-ones. So.
Yeah. I feel like one-on-ones, when the owner does it, it's our meeting and they're there.
Right.
But then when like someone else does it,
dominate.
Yeah. When someone else does it, it's like, it's their meeting and we're just there to facilitate and help them.
Yeah. And no matter what I say, like there's certain people that no matter like how I try to preface it, they always like are nervous and they feel like they're in trouble.
Yeah. Especially if you're like, hey, are you free Thursday? They're like, oh my God, I thought something bad was going to happen. And it's like, oh no, sorry. It was just a check-in. Steven, honestly, your idea was, I felt, one of the best, which was taking people out to lunch more. And it's harder as the team gets bigger, but you know, sub 15 or so, it was just like every other day. I liked going out. I don't like bringing in lunch as much, but that was a nice time to, and I think they value it too, I think.
Oh yeah. I think when you can get away from the shop and just say like, what's up? My business partner, Jed, will take people to Chili's, but like, come on, we're going to Chili's. Come on, we're going here. And you're like, okay, sweet. Makes people's day for sure.
Thanks, Kyle. It's Kyle Robinson. Print My Threads. Appreciate you being a member of Fabric and an awesome progressive shop owner. It's always great to have, you know, like-minded people trying to push the envelope forward.
Yeah, man. Well, thanks for having me on again. And hope to see you guys.
Same time next year. We'll see you.
All right.
Have a good one, Prognosis. See you in the next episode. Thanks so much for listening. Hopefully that was informative. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like. Don't forget to hit the bell for notifications if you enjoyed this video. If you enjoy all the stuff we're putting out, it's really helpful. We love to just be able to see it. That means that we're doing a good job. To subscribe, hit the bell for notifications and hit the like button. And I'll see you in the next episode. Bye.